Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Jordan says Islamic State fighters captured a pilot in Syria. And in Bethlehem, Christmas Eve scuffle caps 10th year. I'm Bob Doty, reporting from Washington. Jordan says Islamic State militants have captured one of its pilots after his plane went down in northern Syria during a mission against IS insurgents. The Jordanian army said in a statement Wednesday that it is holding the militants responsible for the pilot's life and safety. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported earlier that Islamic State fighters shot the plane down near Raqqa, and as of December 15th, the coalition has conducted about 553 airstrikes. Christmas Eve in Bethlehem began less than peacefully Wednesday when a shoving match broke out between a marching band and police during holiday celebrations. Video of the scuffle shows security forces with batons raised as the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem was quickly ushered away from a crowd packing the streets near the Church of the Nativity, said to be built over the birthplace of Jesus. Palestinian police had increased their presence with 500 officers around the city in anticipation of thousands of Christian pilgrims for the holiday. One, the Palestinian Minister of Tourism had this to say.
We're expecting until the end of this month to have received around 100,000 visitors coming to Bethlehem from all over the world.
Representatives of Ukraine, Russia, pro-Russian rebels, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe resumed fresh talks Wednesday. Negotiations are focusing on how to solidify a September ceasefire that has reduced the fighting, the pullback of troops, heavy weapons, prisoner exchanges, and the delivery of humanitarian aid to eastern Ukraine. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama is welcoming Sony Pictures' decision to release a controversial movie about the assassination of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sony pulled the interview last week after its computers were hacked by unknown attackers who threatened more damage if the film was released as scheduled. The U.S. blamed North Korea for the cyber attack. On Wednesday, Sony reversed its decision to cancel the movie, announcing a limited theatrical release December 25th. Police in northeastern India say at least 52 people have now died after a series of coordinated attacks by suspected tribal separatists. Parts of Assam state remained under curfew Wednesday following the violence there late Tuesday that Prime Minister Narendra Modi called an act of cowardice. Authorities have blamed the banned National Democratic Front of Boroland. India has designated the group as a terrorist organization. A police officer has shot and killed an armed black man in a St. Louis suburb near where an unarmed black teen was killed by a white officer in August. The shooting took place late Tuesday at a gas station in Berkeley, Missouri. St. Louis County Police spokesman John Belmar said the officer encountered two men during a routine check at a gas station. Spokesman said one of the men pointed a gun at the officer, prompting the officer to open fire. The second man fled the scene. Belmar says the suspect had a history of run-ins with the law, including assaults, armed robbery, and theft. The U.S. Labor Department says the number of layoffs have declined across the nation. The number of people signing up for unemployment assistance dropped by 9,000 last week to a nationwide total of 280,000. Economists use initial jobless claims as a way to keep track of the number of people losing jobs. Many experts say jobless claims at this level are a sign of an improving job market as employers hang on to existing employees and begin hiring new ones. Former U.S. President George H.W. Bush has been admitted to a hospital in Houston, Texas. A spokesman for the 90-year-old Bush said the former president was taken to Houston Methodist Hospital after experiencing shortness of breath. The White House released a statement saying President Barack Obama, who is vacationing in Hawaii, has been informed of the elder Bush's illness. The statement said Mr. Obama and his wife Michelle send their good wishes to the ailing Bush and the entire family. George H.W. Bush served as the 41st U.S. president from 1989 to 1993. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, I believe in the principle of accountability for these terrible crimes, and I think if the International Criminal Court was to be eliminated now, that would be a devastating blow for the whole ideal of international justice.
That's Anton Dworkin of the European Council on Foreign Relations speaking on the International Criminal Court. We'll have details coming up. Also, the Somali Parliament approved a new prime minister today. Pirates hijack a naval gunboat on a major waterway in Nigeria's oil-rich Bayelsa State. And an African Union official talks about efforts to guarantee free and fair elections. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Ethiopia, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the Somali Parliament approved a new prime minister today, endorsed by an overwhelming margin, the appointment of Omar Abdulrashid Ali Shamarke. He replaces Abdulwali Sheikh Ahmed, who was deadlocked in a power struggle with President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud for the past month. Shamarke, 54, recently served as Somalia's ambassador to the United States and was prime minister in a transitional administration in 2009 and 2010. The government must now finish a review of a provisional constitution and establish a federal system. The country has for decades survived violent clan rivalries, clashes with jihadists linked to al-Qaeda, and periodic drought and starvation. The International Criminal Court was created to pursue some of the world's most heinous crimes in places unable to deliver justice. No perpetrator is too powerful to face charges at the Hague-based tribunal, or that was the idea anyway. But the collapse of the case against Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and other setbacks are fueling a debate about the ICC's effectiveness and relevancy. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
The appeals chamber, by majority, Chad Song partly dissenting.
A victory for the International Criminal Court. Earlier this month, appeals judges at the Hague Tribunal upheld the conviction of Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. The sentence closed the tribunal's first ever case, and it brings to three the number of cases the court has concluded since becoming operational in 2002, including one acquittal.
There has been no indication from the representative of the government of Kenya that they intend to adopt any of the measures.
But December is better remembered for the collapse of the prosecution's case against Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta. The ICC's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, filed a statement withdrawing allegations against him related to post-election violence in Kenya. She blamed Kenyan authorities of intimidating witnesses and failing to deliver documents the prosecution claims were key in building its case. Today, the Kenyatta case is strengthening debate around a fundamental question. Should the ICC continue to exist? For Anthony Dworkin, a rights specialist at the European Council on Foreign Relations, the answer is yes.
Well, I believe in the principle of accountability for these terrible crimes. And I think if the International Criminal Court was to be eliminated now, that would be a devastating blow for the whole ideal of international justice. So I really would oppose any move to eliminate the ICC.
Many disagree. Critics argue the ICC is influenced not just by justice, but by politics. The United Nations Security Council refers investigations to the ICC, but three of its members, Russia, China, and the United States, are not member states. Critics say its accomplishments, just two convictions in a dozen years, do not justify the hefty costs of running it. And some African leaders claim the court is biased since all those now on trial are African. Steve Lemoyne is senior advisor for the Coalition for the ICC, an international umbrella group. He lists a number of court successes this year, including getting charges confirmed against former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo, whose trial begins next year. He says the court needs the resources and support to do its job effectively, including from its African critics.
The majority of the referrals from these situations in Africa have come from Africa, beyond the referrals by the Security Council and others. As long as there's evidence indicating that they should pursue those cases, I think they should basically do that.
In the Kenyatta case, analyst Workin says the prosecution stretched too far.
To pursue a case against an African head of state without the evidence to sustain the case is really a very unfortunate position to be in, even if it simply relates to the fact that it's hard for the court to build a case against a head of state and a government that's not cooperating, and it's going to be impossible for them to do that without stronger international support.
But this month, the court stepped back when it felt it was not getting that international backing. Chief Prosecutor Bensouda told the UN Security Council she had suspended an investigation into alleged war crimes in Darfur for lack of support from the body. Observers say that is unlikely, since Security Council member China has traditionally supported Sudan. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who has an ICC arrest warrant against him for genocide and other charges, claims victory. ICC coalition advisor Steve Lemoine.
The UN Security Council itself seems to be uncommitted and has not taken any action where the government of Sudan itself has failed to cooperate with ICC arresting Omar al-Bashir. So the Security Council needs to take more concrete action in cases where its member states fail to abide by its own resolutions.
In other cases, the tribunal is reaching out. Beyond Africa, current investigations include cases in Colombia, Georgia, Honduras, Iraq, and Ukraine. In Afghanistan, Bensouda says she's looking into the U.S. military's alleged use of so-called enhanced investigation tactics, or torture. Washington is not a signatory of the Rome Statute that established the court, but Afghanistan is. Analyst Dworkin says the Afghanistan example underscores the ICC's fundamental dilemma.
The more it goes after cases which are politically difficult, which are involving major powers like the United States, the less likely it is to achieve results, the more likely it is to provoke the hostility among the big powers. On the other hand, I don't think it's a viable way forward for the court to look like it's simply justice for the weak countries of the world.
The solution, Dworkin says, is not to abolish the court, but to strengthen its ability to do its job properly and to be more realistic about what it can achieve and what it cannot. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine says the nine-month-long battle to control the Ebola virus in West Africa may take another year to reach its goal. Peter Piot said today that the massive efforts to stop the spread of the virus in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea could extend to the end of 2015. Piot was a discoverer of the original Ebola virus in 1976 and headed the global UN AIDS program for many years. The World Health Organization reports that more than 7,500 people have died of Ebola, mostly in three Western African countries. In other news about the virus, a UN peacekeeper from Nigeria has recovered from Ebola at a hospital in the Netherlands and has returned to duty. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 14 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Somalia's parliament approves a new prime minister today. Pirates hijack a naval gunboat on a major waterway in Nigeria's oil-rich Bayelsa state. And an African Union official talks about efforts to guarantee free and fair elections. And for more news and information 24/7, visit our website at www.voanews.com. In Malawi, the management for Jaranda School of Orphans in the commercial capital Blantyre recently hosted a Christmas party for its students. The party marked closure of the school for Christmas and New Year holidays. VOA's Lamek Messina reports from Blantyre.
Around 500 people, including students, school staff members, and other people from surrounding areas attended the event, which was held at the school's premises in Chigumula area. The party included gifts, some time with Santa Claus, and a dancing showcase by the students themselves. The school management told VOA that this is a tradition the school has been doing for its students since it started 13 years ago. Luke Disho is the director for the school.
It's very, very important for us to celebrate Christmas because our children don't have parents, they don't have families, they stay with an old grandmother or distant uncle or aunt at home, and they're not able at home to celebrate and to have a party and to have, you know, a little bit of sweet and cake for the children. So we want a happy day for the children to celebrate the spirit of Christmas. And it's also a way for our children to learn to give.
Disho, who is also an honorary consul for France in Malawi, said before the main event, the patrons were also treated to a nice meal from the students.
We had a big, big lunch, great big lunch, with goat meat and rice and sima, of course, and vegetables. And those are our students themselves who cooked the meal for everybody, for over 500 people.
Eda Zimba is one of the students who entertained the patrons with a dancing style.
The celebration is really cool, and I don't even know how to express it because I've enjoyed myself, I've ate, and now I'm here to dance. And what have interested me very most is the gifts that we have received, the puffs, the biscuits, the squash, and the dance.
She told VOA that she thanks the school's management for hosting the Christmas party to the learners, who in most cases do not have Christmas parties in their respective homes. Another student, Emmanuel Chisali, said good meal aside, the event has taught him the spirit of sharing.
Actually, this has brought a change in my life. I've learned that we have to have the heart of sharing one another, as the Father Christmas was doing.
Founded in 2002, Jagaranda School for Orphans is the only school in Malawi which provides free primary, secondary, and tertiary education to orphans. A Malawian woman, Marie Da Silva, started the school after she returned from the United States, where she spent 19 years working as a nanny. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Well, once again, the festive end-of-the-year season has rolled around. Across Central Africa and Cameroon in particular, Christmas 2014 is not so merry for some households. From Douala, Interyiki Divine Jr. reports that the soaring cost of living, a scarcity of Christmas goods, and armed conflict have spoiled the feast for thousands.
I'm strolling along the streets of Cameroon's largest city and economic nerve center, Douala. As usual during this time of the year, Christmas carols are blaring from roadside speakers, and flanking me are window shoppers contemplating what to take home to their folks for this year's commemoration of the birth of the biblical Savior, Jesus Christ. The majority of those I speak with, however, say this year a scarcity of toys, decorations, and other articles have sent prices going through the roofs. For instance, Chinese-made toy laptops, which sold for about $5 last year, now cost $8. Those deploring the price hikes, like Winifred Mbibu, blame the snail-paced retrieval of containers with imported Christmas goods from the Douala seaport.
Those prices are so high. So this year is very expensive. Things are very expensive. Yes. Whether maybe when those containers will come, maybe prices will change. But for the moment, prices are so high.
Importers are pointing fingers at cumbersome red tape and corruption by customs officials at the Douala seaport, the largest in Central Africa, which serves landlocked Chad and the war-torn Central African Republic. They say imported containers have been abandoned by merchants who cannot pay huge customs duty charges and amounts required to bribe officials. Back in the streets and markets, vendors wise enough to have stockpiled supplies in time for the feast complain buyers are in short supply. Makin Difo, a dealer in toys and decorative items including artificial Christmas trees, says he is confounded.
This end of here, we don't have people who want to come to buy. We think that there are not money in Cameroon. We don't know what is happening. We have goods, but we don't have somebody to buy. We don't know.
Across the country, 75% of school leavers head on straight for the unemployment pool, according to government statistics. The unemployed join in grumbling over poverty, meager salaries, and belated payouts.
With the bad situation and with the level of the family, it is difficult to satisfy everyone. You know, we have a larger family to take care of, and it's not at all easy right now.
This man, a family head requesting anonymity, tells me that as a result of endemic poverty, the extended family notions of sharing and reunions are fading as household spending contracts. Elsewhere and up in the predominantly Muslim north, reports indicate residents, including those from Christian communities, are neither venturing out nor indulging in any celebrations for fear of Boko Haram attacks. And a similar ambience prevails in the eastern part of the country, where there are recurring fatal incursions by rebels from the Central African Republic. For VOA News, I'm Tariq Devine Jr. in Douala, Cameroon.
And it's 22 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The Islamist sect Boko Haram's bloody five-year war to carve a caliphate out of northern Nigeria has dominated global media coverage of Nigeria. However, violence in the south is often triggered by Nigeria's conflicts over oil, not religion. For the second time in 3 months, pirates hijacked a naval gunboat on the Santa Barbara River, a major waterway that flows through the heart of oil-rich Bayelsa State in southern Nigeria and harbors a large population of pirate gangs. Three crew members are missing. Pirates hijacked another gunboat on the same river in October. In other news from Bayelsa State, an organization of angry youths accuses town elders in the town of Odi of mishandling some $200 million in compensation paid by the federal government. A judge last year ordered the Nigerian military to pay the citizens of the 15,000 population town for losses of human life and property when 2,000 soldiers went on a killing spree 15 years ago. Poor communities in the region have long disputed distribution of vast sums of oil revenues the government receives. Court testimony in the Odi massacre indicated the soldiers sought revenge for the deaths of a dozen police by armed gunmen. The army shelled the community and shot down unarmed civilians. Abuja placed the death toll at 43, but another report said more than 2,000 people died. The award, minus legal fees, was to be divided by residents of Odi. The town is now divided over what happened to the funds that were supposed to develop the poverty-stricken community in the middle of an oil-producing region. And African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma says the African Union is working with Zimbabwe and other African countries to ensure free and open polls. Speaking with reporter Sandra Naira of a formerly classified report regarding allegations of voter fraud in Zimbabwe's 2002 elections, Dr. Dlamini-Zuma said the role of the African Union is not just to police elections in troubled countries, but also to help offer solutions.
Our responsibility should not be just police to say, oh, this one has done wrong, but it's to say, how can we ensure that in Africa our elections are credible, they are transparent, they also take into account concerns of the opposition parties and so on. And all along, people were saying, oh, the AU will always say the ruling party has won. We were in Malawi recently. We didn't say that. We observed. And we said the party that won, won. It wasn't the ruling party. Because our ultimate objective is that elections in Africa should be democratic, should be free, should be transparent. So we work with countries to try and make them like that, so that in future that mistake does not happen.
In terms of the Zimbabwe elections, following the agreement between the AU, SADC and Zimbabwe as we go towards 2018 elections, you know, what role is the AU playing in ensuring that all that complicates elections is dealt with in terms of the media, electoral reforms, and all those issues that were pointed out by the AU and the SADC?
Well, what we are doing even now is to follow up on those things. Some of the things are in the law. For instance, the issue of airtime on television and all that radio in Zimbabwe, it's in the law. They are supposed to get equal time given by the Electoral Commission. But the law also says any political party can over and above buy airtime if it so wishes. So I think it's very important to really be objective and look at what the law says. And if the law is wrong, then it's up to the Zimbabwean parliament to look at that. But at the moment, the law says the Electoral Commission should give equal time, which they say they did. But in addition, the law says any party can buy more time. This time, I think ZANU-PF bought a lot of time because we saw a lot of them on the air. In the previous election, the MDC appeared a lot more. Maybe they had more airtime because they bought more. So if that's the law, then if people are dissatisfied, then the AU can't change the law. But the country must then say, okay, maybe you're not allowed to buy airtime. But in all elections, even in Western countries, people do buy airtime. So we are working with all the countries, not only Zimbabwe, but in all the countries, we always observe that this can still be improved, that can still be improved. Whether it's in Malawi, whether it's in Zimbabwe, whether it's where. So we are working with those countries, and we hope that by their next election, those elections will be better than the previous ones.
That's African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma speaking with reporter Sandra Naira. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa presents a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control.
Many Ebola patients who are treated in hospital will survive and recover. Ebola is a serious disease, but when people have recovered, the doctors test them, and when the disease is all gone, they are discharged. The discharged patients cannot transmit Ebola. The virus has left their bodies, and they cannot pass Ebola to anyone. Not their children, their other family members, people sitting next to them in the taxi or bus. Partners, however, must abstain or always use a condom for sex for 3 months after discharge from the health center. And remember, with the right information and together with our healthcare workers, we can protect ourselves from Ebola.
That was a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, brought to you by VOA Africa.